If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 543. Time-worn mansions, crafts, shops, street food, cave temples, and beaches. Hear why Lonely Planet named this region one of the top 10 places to go in 2017 as we go to Perak, Malaysia. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. And without further ado, let's talk about Malaysia. I'd like to welcome to the show Jub from TikiTouringKiwi.com, who's come to talk to us about Malaysia. Jub, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chris. Let's get into this.
And when I say we're talking about Malaysia, we're talking about a specific region of Malaysia. Where are we talking about today? Can you put it on a map for us?
So we're going to be talking about Perak, which is the fourth largest province in Malaysia. And the capital of Perak is Ipoh, which is about a two-hour drive north of Kuala Lumpur, which I believe you'll be familiar with.
We probably ought to put Malaysia on a map, too, just because I'm not sure that everybody can find it. But we're in that region between Thailand and Singapore, the long, skinny country. Well, not that long, but...
Yeah, the mainland is the long, skinny section.
The mainland, that's true. Clarification there, because there are parts that are out there by Indonesia. So why are we talking about Perak and Penang?
Perak is an unknown tourist destination for international visitors. It was recently named in the top 10 regions to visit in 2017 by Lonely Planet. And it was the capital, Ipoh, was listed as the number 6 best city in Asia to visit.
And what is there to see in Perak? Why, in your estimation, should someone come to Perak and Penang?
Ipoh is well known for its street art and cave temples and food scene, which is very similar to Penang, which is a city in a neighboring province. But a lot of international tourists will start in Penang and then completely skip over Perak and head to either Kuala Lumpur or the Cameron Highlands. So if you head to Perak, you're going to be off the beaten track, but you've got world-class food, awesome street art where you don't have to queue for 5 minutes to get a picture, and you've got cave temples, which are awesome to look at, a couple of waterfalls, a nice island called Pangkor Island, which has got an interesting bird to look at called the hornbill, and it's also home to one of the oldest rainforests in the world called Royal Baloum National Park.
Now, I feel like you may be missing something here, too. We're also talking about an area that I'm guessing, guessed on geography, has a few tropical beaches.
I wouldn't say they're tropical. More people would stick to the likes of Langkawi, but Pangkor Island is about 5 minutes off the mainland by ferry. That gets a very little international tourism, but it's big for domestic tourism, again, because it's 2 hours from Kuala Lumpur. But the beaches here, they're pretty empty. I recently went during the high season and had the beach nearly all to myself.
Well, I'm going to defend my classification of them as tropical, as the equator just barely misses Malaysia, so we are firmly in the tropics.
Yep, definitely. And Perak definitely has a tropical rainforest climate. It's hot.
Excellent. Well, let's go back and do that in a little more detail and slower. Where would you start someone who is visiting this region?
All right. The best place to start your journey and to base yourself, actually, is Ipoh, which is the capital. Easily can spend at least 2 days exploring Ipoh, but you can spend upwards of four depending on the time of year you're visiting. If it's raining, your afternoons will be cut a little bit short.
And when you say if it's raining, is there a time of year that it's not raining that we should come instead? Or when is the right time? We're in the tropics, so there's no big winter or big summer season.
Yeah, that's right. So the temperature is actually fairly consistent all around. And if you look it up online, it'll say it's rainy season all year round. But the driest month is in July,
okay,
which is also a really hot month.
Got it.
So I think the best time of year to visit is in February and March. It's a bit of a balancing act.
I was just seeing that this year, right now, from where I live, the tickets to Kuala Lumpur are amazingly cheap. So yep. There you go.
And then once you land in Kuala Lumpur, you can jump on a train and be in Perak in 2 hours.
And when you say Ipoh, I'm having trouble finding it. So Ipoh is the name that we're saying here. Okay. And what is there to do in Ipoh? We're basing ourselves in Ipoh for a couple of days. What are we doing?
All right. So we will probably be staying around the old town, which is on one side of the river. It also has Little India on that side of town. So in the old town, you've got street art by, I don't know how to say his name, by Ernest Zakharovich. But he is the guy who is famous for the Penang street art. But he's also had seven pieces commissioned in Ipoh, which if you like art, they're a must see. But there's also a bunch more art all around the city. You sort of just wander on around the streets of the old town and you'll just keep coming across more pieces. Ipoh is the home of white coffee. So depending on where you've been
coffee.
In the world. Yeah. You may have
That's
seen
That's not just coffee
franchise.
With a lot of milk.
No, I believe, I'm not a coffee drinker, but I believe white coffee gets its name because they bleach their coffee beans in margarine.
Okay.
So if you've seen the franchise Old Town White Coffee, which is big, bold, yellow lettering, that originated in Ipoh.
Hmm. I am not familiar. I'm also not a coffee drinker, but I am not familiar with white coffee, except for the Boston version of just a lot of cream in your coffee. Now, we're not talking, when we talk about Ipoh, we're not talking about a small town. We're talking about an area with, 750,000 people or something like that. I'm in the middle of the city here in the old town, is what you're recommending in terms of places to stay?
Yeah, so we're pretty much in the center. It's a very spread out town. You won't see many high rises at mm-hmm. all. Yeah, so you can use the old town as a base. Like, you can get to most of the tourist attractions within a few minutes. And if you want to go further afield, there are public buses. Ubers are really cheap in the area, which is awesome. And you can rent a car if you want to go further afield.
Okay. You mentioned a couple different things there. You said, if I want to get to the tourist attractions, what are the tourist attractions that I should get to, in your opinion?
Outside of Ipoh city center, you've got three cave temples, which mm-hmm. are in a couple of different directions. My personal favorite is Perak Tong Cave Temple.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I think it's about 7 kilometers from the old town, and you sort of walk into this massive cave that has got a couple of temples and Buddhas and other Buddhism-related things. You jump out the other side of the cave and you can walk up and get some amazing views of the city and the limestone caves in the background.
And I'm guessing, since most of the cave temples I'm familiar with tend to be fairly old, tend to be some of the first temples built when Buddhism was starting, that we're talking about an area that goes back quite a ways in terms of historically. Other tourist sites we should get to?
So once you visited Phrak Thong Cave Temple, if you wanted to have like a little relax in a recreation area, there's Gunung Lang Lake to hang out. So you turn up at the lake and there's a boat that'll take you across the other side of the lake, and then there's just some towers you can climb and a couple of little walks of 1.5 to 2 kilometers long along flat ground. And then when you get back to the old city, it's worth taking a walk along the Kinta River, which is where Ipoh all started. It used to be one of the world's largest areas for tin mining, I think that's how you say it.
Okay.
So yeah, there's no tin mining happening there every day. It all finished up in the 50s and 60s, I believe. But that was pretty much where the town of Ipoh was built upon.
Interesting. So, and then you also mentioned the food. So what are we, where are we going to eat and what are we trying while we're here?
Well, I'm a silly vegan, but one of the famous dishes that I recommended to everyone who came to visit me in Ipoh was chicken and bean sprouts, which is an odd combination. But apparently the bean sprouts are really good in Ipoh because of the limestone mountains that surround the city. It makes them really juicy. There are a bunch of Indian restaurants, which is pretty standard for Malaysia in any big city. And chicken rice is also another variation on popular meals.
Okay. Well, as a vegan, what do you recommend?
So as a vegan, I really enjoyed Funny Mountain.
Funny Mountain?
Which is, they specialize in soya bean, which is, you might know it as tofu.
Sure.
And mm-hmm. even meat eaters who I took there really loved it. You sort of turn up at the restaurant, and if you're in a car, they do a drive-by service, so you don't even have to get out of your car. You sort of just ask for some tofu, and they'll sort you out something. And it's really cheap. For about 4 ringgit, you can get a nice large cup of tofu, which doesn't sound too appetizing, but it's hard to describe, but it's really good, really juicy, really flavorful.
Anything else we want to do in Ipoh before we move on here?
So when it's raining, you will want to go to one of what they consider to be one of the original Old Town white coffee stores. It's called Sin Yun Long, which is in the Old Town. And if you sort of just walk in, there'll be a lot of locals who have been going there every day for 20 plus years, or since they were a kid really, and they order their white coffee. And so you can just walk in and take a seat, order a white coffee. You won't know really what's going on, but you'll then all of a sudden have a coffee served up in front of you.
Excellent.
And it's quite interesting just to watch all the locals interacting and just going about their day. So yeah, if you really want to test out your white coffee game, you can pop over the road to the other competing original white coffee shop and try a coffee there.
The other competing original.
Yeah, it depends which local you talk to. They'll vote for which one of their they believe is the original white coffee.
Okay, and then after Ipoh, where are we off to?
We're going to hire a car preferably, because public transport in Perak is hit or miss. It does exist, but it takes a really long time. It can take a long time to get from A to B. So ideally, you can hire a car for about $25 a day.
Mm-hmm.
And the first awesome day trip, which is where I discovered Ipoh, is to Gua Temporong, which is about 50 kilometers south of Ipoh. And it's a massive cave, which you can take a tour through. It takes about 3 hours. At first, you're sort of just walking along a path. It's all man-made, and you're thinking it's pretty ordinary for a cave. But then the guide sort of takes you off the path, and you're suddenly squeezing yourself through gaps, wading through a bit of a stream. You slide down with a bit of free fall at one point, but it's completely safe, and anyone of all skill levels can do it.
But don't bring shoes that you highly value.
No. Or you can just pay $1.50 for a pair of waterproof shoes that they'll sort out for you.
Okay. That sounds like that probably is a good use of $1.50.
Yeah, as long as you turn up. But do bring a spare change of clothes, that you can buy your torches, your shoes. And they don't really give out helmets, but I'm sure if you wanted a helmet, they'll give you one.
Okay. And those of us from the U.S. can buy our flashlights instead. Okay.
Flashlights is your version of torches, yeah.
Torches for us go with pitchforks, so.
So then we're going to head back to Ipoh for the day. Another day trip is to Pangkor Island, which we mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an hour and a half drive from Ipoh. And once you arrive in the town, which will get you on the ferry to Pangkor, you can just park up your car, jump on a ferry that takes 5 to 10 minutes. And then you're on an island which you can hire a bicycle on and circumnavigate the island in about 4 or 5 hours. On the island, you'll find a handful of beaches. You'll see some wildlife, mainly hornbills is the main attraction or one of the main attractions to the island.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of these islands that doesn't get any international tourists because there's not like a great, there's no massive hotel scene or...
Mm, okay.
Like
no
tourist
resort
infrastructure.
Scene, yeah.
Yeah, no, there's no resorts on the island. Well, there are, but very not modern resorts.
Mm-hmm.
But you can stay on the island if you like, but a day trip is enough to see all of the island, and you can head back to Ipoh again for the night.
Now, we should say, you're driving down there in a rental car. We're driving on the left.
That's correct. Yep.
So just a heads up for those of you who are not as a Jub is from a country where they drive on the left normally. That is something you need to know. Anything else we need to know in terms of driving in Malaysia? You really wish somebody had told you...
If you're looking to hire a scooter in Perak, you'll be out of luck. There's not many options in terms of renting. And speaking to a couple of Uber drivers, they do say that the Perak drivers are horrible. But I didn't see any accidents myself. So as long as you take care, it can't be any worse than the rest of Southeast Asia, driving-wise.
You just talked to a few people out of renting a car and driving there.
Yeah. From the international tourists I did talk to who did rent a car, they were completely fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. Where are we going next?
On another day trip, it's more of a half-day trip, which you can combine with another town, is to the Orangutan Island. So most people head to Malaysia to see the orangutans on Borneo, which
is the
island to the east of the mainland Malaysia. But you can actually see some orangutans on an island about an hour and a half from Ipoh. When you arrive at Bukit Merah, there is a bit of a theme park there, but no one seems to go to this theme park. So you just buy a ticket at the jetty and you can jump on a boat which runs every 45 minutes to the Orangutan Island, which is about a 10-minute boat ride away. The island, I believe, is 24 hectares in size and it holds 20 orangutans at this time of we're having a chat. And they're not caged, rather the humans are caged. So once you get off the boat, you walk along the jetty and then you're in a sort of a cylinder-like cage, and you'll get a tour up and down the cylinder. You will see orangutans. The island's not that big, and the orangutans are pretty curious. But don't be disappointed if you don't see them. They're just going to be hanging out on the island, up in the trees or in the water even. I've heard, I didn't know an orangutan can swim, but apparently they can.
I didn't know either.
Yeah, so it's a lot more affordable if you are on a quick trip to Malaysia to go see some orangutans. In terms of the ethics of this orangutan island, because orangutans aren't indigenous to mainland Malaysia, they do work with the organisations in Borneo. They have basically created orangutan islands to make it an easier place to get to for researchers internationally. They take orangutans that have been affected due to deforestation and they've been injured in the wild, and they are looking to rehome them later on down the road when they're equipped.
So it's basically an orangutan sanctuary, really, yep, that you're visiting. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that makes me feel better that I didn't know orangutans were on the mainland.
Yeah, that was something I didn't know before arriving, too, so that caught me off guard. But
so they weren't originally, but they're tourists, so.
Yeah, just like us.
Excellent. Are we seeing anything else here?
While you're on the way back to Ipoh, it's worth having a stop in the town of Taiping, which is spelt T-A-I-P-I-N-G.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't spent much time there, but it is a really green city, and I've heard that there is some cool things to do at nighttime. So if you head there not too long before sunset, you can visit a mangrove forest, which sounds really cool to me. I didn't make it there. But then you can get a boat ride and see fireflies. If you're familiar with glowworms,
mm-hmm.
pretty much like flies that are glowing and they fly all around you and light up the sky.
I think actually more of my audience is familiar with fireflies than with glowworms. But that was an interesting Kiwi perspective there.
Yeah, we're all about the glowworms. I'd never heard of fireflies before I got to Perak. And so once you leave Taiping and make your way back to Ipoh, that'll be a pretty big day.
In possibly 2 days then, if we want to slow it down and do a little more depth.
Yeah, and you can find accommodation in all of the different cities mm-hmm. around Perak, but the options will be fairly limited, and don't expect to see an Intercontinental or a Four Seasons okay. in these places.
Speaking of lodging, are there particular places or styles of lodging that you would recommend instead of looking for the Intercontinental?
I was volunteering in a hostel. It was called Bed and Bike Backpacker Studio, mm-hmm. which is great for the budget backpacker. But if you're looking for more of a budget, a mid-range hotel, anything around the old town will set you back $60 to $100 per night for a reasonably good quality place that's going to be safe, secure, and be in a great location.
I don't know that we've talked about volunteering or working at hostels on the show before, so it'd probably be worth pausing here for a few seconds, because this is something that's not uncommon, but I just honestly can't remember that we've talked about doing it, although we probably have. It's just been a long time. So there are opportunities often for working at a hostel in exchange for a place to stay. How do you find an opportunity like that?
So if you go to these two popular websites that have sort of dominating this niche, helpx.net
mm-hmm.
and Workaway. So those are the okay. two leaders in the volunteering industry. So you can sort of set up a profile. You can search by country. So if you go to Malaysia, there's about 100 different options around the country. You're generally going to be working 4 or 5 hours a day, five mm-hmm. days a week in exchange for some accommodation and sometimes food. There are more options than just hostels. You might be working on a eco farm, or you might be at a restaurant, or just generally helping out. Yeah, there's lots of different opportunities, but definitely check it out.
Right, right. And we've talked a little bit about woofing, for instance, where you're working on eco farms and things like that. If you're interested in more information about that, check out the website for that opportunity in terms of working on especially organic farms, woofing. Excellent. So where are we off to next?
We can visit Kelly's Castle, which is about 20 minutes from Ipoh. It's haunted, apparently. So it was owned by a Scottish lad back in the late 19th century, I believe. And it never got completed because the workers came down with a bout of Spanish flu and died. So their spirits are apparently still in the building, which is how it got its haunted name. When you arrive at the castle, it looks completed on the outside, but once you start walking around it, you'll see it's definitely not completed. But that's a good way to spend 45 minutes to an hour just climbing in and out of the different rooms. And when you get to the top, you get beautiful views of the surrounding area, which is really green. And then once we've visited Kelly's Castle, it's time to go and head to one of the more gimmicky places in Malaysia. So it's the Leaning Tower of Teluk Intan, which is also known as the Leaning Tower of Malaysia, based off Pisa. So it's very similar in that it used to be a water tower back in a few decades ago. And due to the soft ground, it sunk a little bit and now has remnants of Pisa. It's definitely not as popular as Pisa. So I went to go get the classic tourist photo of pushing the tower over, and I just asked a local guy because I was the only person around, and I sort of thought we sort of communicated that we knew what was happening, and he was like very happy that he took a good photo, and I was not pushing the tower. I was sort of on the tower. It was a little bit awkward because I couldn't ask him to take another photo because he was so proud of himself. So that was sort of, if you haven't been to Pisa but you want to claim that you've been to the Leaning Tower, definitely head there and then sort of just cruise on back to Ipoh. And it's about time we spent an evening along the Kinta River at night time. So if you walk up to the northern end of the Kinta River from the old town, you'll come across a little bit of a night market. where there's a bunch of street food available. And you'll be able to try some ice kacang there, which is considered a dessert, I believe. It is shaved ice, red beans, and it's got some green stuff in it as well. But it's a kind of a famous-y dessert available in Ipoh and other parts of Malaysia. It's not my cup of tea, but it doesn't taste too bad with the red beans, even though it's meant to be a dessert. Ipoh is definitely not somewhere you're going to go for a party, given that it's mostly a Muslim city. If you want to have a beer, your best bet is to find a convenience store and just take a couple of beers back to your wherever you're staying. So the last location we can visit that is a must visit in Perak, I haven't actually visited, but it's called the Royal Balloon State Park, and it's one of the oldest rainforests in the world. And I've heard that to get there you need to take a boat. That's after you've driven to about 2 hours northeast of Ipoh, and there's a bunch of good hiking and wildlife to see there, but I can't give you too much details.
Okay, and where are we off to after Ipoh?
If you've got any time left on your trip, you've got the two big tourist destinations either side of Perak, which is the Cameron Highlands, which is pretty much borders Perak. It's right on just on the other side of the border.
Mm-hmm.
When I say border, you're sort of just crossing an imaginary line into a different state. But in the Cameron Highlands, it's well known for its tea plantations and hiking.
Mm.
So if you go there for a day, you base yourself in Tanarata, which you can reach in about an hour and a half from Ipoh, and go for a couple of tours of a tea factory and tea plantations and spend the day hiking. I would recommend that over going to Penang, because Penang is very similar to Ipoh in that it's got street art, food, and a lot of heritage buildings in the city, which if you want to see again, awesome. But Ipoh is really good, as it's not very crowded compared to Penang.
Crowded in terms of tourists?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Because Ipoh is a larger city, right?
I believe Penang is actually a little bit larger.
Okay. Got it.
I would recommend staying away from the old town on a Sunday afternoon in Ipoh, because you've got all of the people coming up from Kuala Lumpur on a day trip, as well as a few busloads of Chinese tourists, and the area just gets too jam-packed.
That's a good day to do some of these trips out into the countryside. Cool.
Yeah, definitely. And a few final things you can finish off your trip with in Ipoh, if you're still looking for things to do, is the Tin Mining Museum. So we mentioned tin mining earlier. Mm-hmm. You will need to book a spot for this tour. I believe they do three daily, and that sort of gives you a lot of history about the tin mining boom that sort of the city was built on. The tour takes about an hour and a half. Yeah, it wasn't my cup of tea. The tour guide seemed to gloss over a lot of facts, but it is one of the more popular things to do in Ipoh, so if you like museums, definitely head there. And right next door to the Tin Mining Museum is the Tea Museum, which I was a really big fan of, which is based around the story of a chap who initially started selling tea on the streets of Ipoh for 5 cents a cup. And he used to sell 1,000 cups a day. So he was making about $60 a day just by selling tea, which in the 50s was a lot of money. He passed away about 4 or 5 years ago, and they now have a tea museum, which is really good at telling his story.
I really enjoyed, I visited a tea plantation. Well, the U.S. only has one, as far as I know, and it is interesting to see the process. It more mechanized in the U.S. than it would be in Malaysia, but very interesting.
There is even a tea plantation in Perak, which is maybe about 45 minutes drive from Ipoh, and I didn't get to tour around the plantation, but the tea leaves were growing on trees rather than bushes, which I found really weird.
Hmm. Should just be large bushes at that point.
Yeah,
it's all the same plant. Yeah. Well, and the interesting thing about tea that I learned at the tea plantation in which we've talked about on the show before in Charleston, South Carolina, is that there's really only one type of tea leaf. Once you're talking about real tea. And green tea, black tea, and oolong tea are all just different ways of processing that leaf, depending on how long you dry it and things like that. So I would have guessed something different before I had been there.
I did not know that because I drink green tea and despise black tea. But if they come from the same leaf, I...
Come from the same leaf, yep.
I probably have no excuses.
Well, they do taste different. I'm with you there, but...
Yeah.
Now, did you go to Perak because you heard about it in Lonely Planet, or did you go there for some other reason?
So I initially heard about EPO when I was just plain looking at a map. So I was in Penang, and my friends were in Kuala Lumpur, and I sort of was just looking at a map to see where we could meet in between the two cities. And EPO came up, and that was just after it had been named as the number 6 best city in Asia to visit by Lonely Planet. And that was in September 2016.
Interesting. What surprised you about Perak?
Purely by the amount of things to do, because the tourist trail in Malaysia sees you go straight from Penang to the Cameron Highlands, which is about a 4-hour journey. Mm-hmm. But if you stop over in Ipoh and Perak itself, there is actually a lot of things to do that are comparable with the other tourist hotspots in Malaysia, such as the street art, the food scene. You've got a great beach on Pangkor, and there's limestone cliffs, caves, temples, everything that you come to Malaysia for, really.
One warning you would give.
The Malaysians are really good at English overall, but they sometimes get in a bit of an agreeable state and they don't want to say no to you. So just be a bit aware of you sort of get misled a little bit from time to time.
Well, that's a generally Asian thing. That's not the only place that you run into it. Yes, yes, yes does not always mean yes.
Yeah, they're trying to be nice.
Anything else we should say before we get to our last four questions?
Definitely dive into the food scene. There are a couple of websites that we can list in the show notes that sort of offer food tours with locals, and that would be definitely something I would look into.
Oh, excellent.
I've met a local friend who took me to a night market a little bit further out of the city centre, and she introduced me to a bunch of vegan foods that I would have had no clue existed, just wandering Malaysia by myself.
Well, and for me, it sounds like you may be similar here, but the night markets in Southeast Asia are just one of the highlights for me.
Yeah, definitely.
Just a fun place for seeing the locals sitting on a little plastic bench and eating something amazing that you may or may not know what it is. But
yeah, exactly. It's a great gimmick.
You're standing at the prettiest spot you saw in Perak. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
So I had just scaled about 300 steps after exiting Perak Tong Cave Temple. And I was standing under a pagoda looking out over the outskirts of Ipoh, and there was just the gorgeous limestone cliffs in the background with their jagged edges, and it just makes for a surreal spot. There was no one else up there. It was perfect.
One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Perak.
If you ask the locals what to do, they will give you what they think is the best answer, but from a Western point of view, it's usually different. For an example, they really recommend going to Sampotong Cave Temple. But in my opinion, that is the least enjoyable one. There's no views to have a look at, and all you're there to do really is to pay the temple attendant a couple of ringgit to buy some tomatoes and feed the turtles, which are in a pond and not very well looked after. And then a couple of other cases are restaurant recommendations. They sort of tell you to go to a couple of restaurants, but every time I've talked to people who followed their recommendations, they said they found better choices of the same dish elsewhere.
Finish this thought. You really know you're in Perak when what?
You're sweating bullets in the middle of the day trying to find a coffee shop, really.
Well, you just talked my wife out of going, but...
It is actually unbearably hot in September, so if you spend any time in Asia, you can normally adjust to the temperature after 2 or 3 days.
Right.
Adjust, as in you can sort of get used to it a little bit, but I just could not do that after a month in Ipoh. Yeah, don't go in September, it's too hot.
Okay. I see, as if my wife were already willing to go to Southeast Asia, but as those people who came to Cambodia with me last year know, that is not the case.
Joan, definitely come to Perak. It's awesome.
Yeah, you're assuming she listens to the show. That's adorable. But if you had to summarize Perak in three words, what three words would you use?
I'm going to go with hidden. It really is a hidden gem, mm-hmm. right in between Penang and Cameron Highlands, which are, I would say, overpopulated with tourists now. You can go to Ipoh and Perak and sort of be a bit of a gimmick as a international tourist. I am going to say growing also, given that it made two features in Lonely Planet this year. Mm-hmm. They are looking to promote the Perak region with their, I think it's Perak, Visit Perak 2017 campaign. So you'll, if you wander around the city, you'll see signs everywhere. So you want to get there soon before it becomes flooded with tourists, I think. I will go with this foodie-centric for the last one. I'm not a foodie, but everyone just loves the food in Ipoh. And compared to Penang, it was about a 50-50 preference on either one. Half the people liked Ipoh and half the people liked the food in Penang better.
Excellent. Our guest again has been Jubb from TikiTouringKiwi.com, which apparently you got in the usual travel blogger giving me three random words that have to do with travel. Jubb, is there one post on Perak or on Malaysia that we should read on your blog that we should link to in the show notes?
Yeah, definitely. So I've just published a post on the seven most interesting places to visit in Perak. And yes, check that one out. And that will soon link you to my Ipoh guide as well.
Excellent, excellent. And then you have another interesting project going on here, announcing right around the time that this show comes out. Did you want to talk about that?
In late January or early February, I will be hosting the Budget Travel Summit, which is going to be a free online event over a week. It will be approximately 30 interviews with experienced travelers who are really good at saving money using one strategy. So like we mentioned before, there'll be a couple of people talking about volunteering. There'll be hitchhikers, couch surfers, house sitters, geocachers, which is one that I've sort of just got onto, and it sort of takes you to really unknown locations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's going to be a bunch of different people, a couple of negotiators, and it's yeah, free online event. It should be good.
Well, Jubb, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for Malaysia and particularly for Perak.
Thank you very much. And I'll see you in Perak soon enough.
News of the community I heard this week from Mary, who wrote about the episode we did recently on Bordeaux. She said, "Hi, Chris, I've been listening to your podcast for a few years now, and I really love your work. It's about time I wrote to say how much I appreciate it. Thank you. I also wanted to comment on the episode about Bordeaux. Was very interested, but I would definitely add that the Lascaux Caves are in the area and are quite amazing to visit. I've traveled there about 5 years ago, and I loved the grot." And Mary, thanks for letting me know. I also heard from Abi, who said, "I love your podcast as they are fun and very informative. You have a knack of asking the questions that are running through my mind as I'm listening to the podcast. That is awesome. Question. You mentioned that you are reading a book on India in your latest podcast, the podcast on Oman. Can you share the book with your readers? I was reading and have now finished a book from the Great Courses on the History of India, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have a question, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com or join us in the conversation on the Facebook group, facebook.com/amateurtraveler. And as always, thanks so much for listening.